Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Is this Stephanie?
Yes. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Oh, very well. Very well. Just give me one second. We have a technical difficulty here.
Okay, no worries.
Okay. Okay. Good evening, and welcome to
Good evening.
And tonight with us we have Stephanie McGuire, who is here in New York and a budding opera singer. And good evening, Stephanie. How are you this afternoon?
Good evening. I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Ah, it's a pleasure. It's definitely a pleasure. I'm going to start with my opening question, which is basically, who is Stephanie McGuire?
Stephanie McGuire is a classical singer living in New York. And I've lived in New York now for about 6 years and have appeared with New York City Opera, and I just did something with the Boston Pops this past summer, and I've got a solo show coming out in December, which is kind of a combination of a classical voice recital and a downtown gritty one-woman show. So that's who Stephanie McGuire is in brief.
Okay. And I know a little about you pertaining to the fact that you haven't always been a classical singer.
That's exactly.
Tell us a little bit about your journey.
My parents are both scientists. My father is a physicist, and my mother has a PhD in chemical education and has been a professor of chemistry and specializes in education. And, even though I was on stage when I was a kid and enjoyed it, I also enjoyed science very much and was kind of shy. You know, I liked being on stage, but I also liked being by myself, so I always imagined that that I would go into science, and I majored in biology at MIT, and then I went on to graduate school at the University of Oxford, where I pursued a PhD in neuroscience, and it wasn't until the middle of that process that I realized that maybe, you know, being an academic scientist was not going to fulfill me at the deepest level, and I needed to look for a way to pursue artistry. And so after I finished my PhD, I went to conservatory and did a master's in opera performance. So that's my journey.
Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I feel that way. I felt a big culture shock moving from science into music. But there's also a big connection. You know, when I tell that to a lot of people, they're not surprised because there's like a connection between math and music. There are a lot of sort of physicist violinists at MIT. But I have to say that it did feel like opposite ends of the spectrum. To me, certainly, you know, among scientists, I'm a little bit extroverted, but among artists, I'm certainly not. So it was a big shift for me.
All right, well, I can definitely see a correlation. I mean, even Einstein played violin. Yeah, so there is that correlation there. You mentioned culture shock. Can we speak a little bit more about that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said you mentioned culture shock in the sense of the switch from science to musician or from scientist to musician. Can we speak a little bit more about that?
Sure. I found academia to be very, intellect-based. You know, people are, the worst thing you can do is be wrong, you know, or say something that's incorrect. So everybody is, you know, really in their heads, and there's not too much concern about feelings. Everything is on a very intellectual level. And, you know, I have been in academia for all of my life, and that's basically, you know, what I knew. And, you know, when I got to conservatory, the thing that I would hear so often was, oh, you're thinking too much, don't think so much, you know, just do it. And I would think, well, what could that possibly mean? What do you mean, don't think so much? And so, you know, the world of artists and performers is one that's very much of feelings and emotions. And of course, the best artists are extremely smart. So it's not really about, you know, that one population is smarter than the other. It's just where the emphasis is. You know, is it on thinking or is it on feeling? And so, it, you know, it took me a little while to sort of make that transition and,
okay.
and understand that.
All right. I think I understand it as well. And are your plans to be a musician full-time, or are you planning to work within both worlds?
Well, I
scientist
do.
And musician.
I do sort of. I mean, I don't work as a scientist anymore, but I do tutor. I tutor chemistry and sometimes biology and SAT prep, math, ACT. So I sort of have a foot in education. And yes, you know, the dream is would be to go from singing job to singing job and make money that way. I also teach voice and teach, sometimes I tutor, you know, music history or music theory, things like that. So, yes, the dream is to perform full-time, but I also, you know, I think maybe 2% of artists do that, even, you know, people with wonderful, singers with wonderful regional careers, everybody has a side business. I knew a bassoonist with a software business, you know, one of the most, you know, one of the workingest mezzos I know has a business, a side business, coaching singers about the business of singing. Another working mezzo I know has a side business developing websites. So, you know, I'm very happy to have a foot in education, and particularly, you know, the sciences and math, for as long as I need to.
Okay. All right. All right. So.
But in terms of, you know, doing research of the kind that I did when I was in graduate school, you know, I'm not that great at doing more than one thing at a time. And so if I were to pursue research, it would take all of my focus and all of my concentration. You know, I would want to be in the laboratory, you know, all the time, the way I like to be in my scores all the time now. And so that, I know there are people who manage to do both, but, you know, I'm such a kind of obsessive person that I never really saw that as a possibility, because when I'm working on a project, I'm pretty much single-mindedly focused on that project.
All right. Well, I think that's actually the most effective way to produce results. So I definitely can agree with that as well. So that brings us to switching from scientist to now musician. How was that experience in the sense of getting a foothold in the musician genre, in the music genre? You have an upcoming show, as was mentioned, in the beginning of December, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. But I can imagine someone with your background from a scientist coming into the field of singer can be somewhat daunting to other musicians, let's put it that way. Or even composers or producers, et cetera. How has that experience been?
That's interesting. I don't think that people are particularly intimidated by me. But, you know, this is sort of how it happened. I decided probably in year two two or three of my PhD that I wanted to try to pursue singing seriously. And so, you know, I had taken 4 years of piano lessons when I was a kid, and I had taken some voice lessons, and immediately I got a teacher, I got a piano teacher, because I knew I would need piano skills, and I started sort of brushing up on my theory and sight singing skills, because I knew I would need that, and also languages. I took a lot of French in high school and college, and a little bit of German, but I knew I would need more German and more Italian. And then I auditioned, and I went to conservatory, and conservatory was great. I went to the Longy Conservatory in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I was in the opera department there. And what that program really gave me was a chance to be on stage a lot, which was great because I hadn't been on stage a lot in a long time. And so there was just the, getting acquainted with performance anxiety and how I deal with that. But I think, getting to know my colleagues and, coaches and directors and teachers, there was a sense of getting to know a new species, because the language that scientists speak in and the language that artists speak in can be very, very different. And so, I sort of zeroed in on a couple of people at conservatory who sort of like were a little bit on the intellectual side themselves, who sort of helped me translate and make that transition. And then after conservatory, what I did was I applied to a bunch of young artist programs, and I don't know if you know a singer named Martina Arroyo. She's one of the most wonderful international spinto sopranos, ever to have lived. And she has dedicated her post-performing life to the training and development of young singers. And she does a summer program in New York. And I applied for this program, and Martina took me on. And so it was really at that program I got to do Berta in The Barber of Seville, Flora in La Traviata, Verdi, and Marcellina in The Marriage of Figaro that summer. With her program, I got to sing with the orchestra, and the costumes and the sets, the costumes in particular were the same ones that the Met uses, and it was just a really wonderful example. And so I met a lot of coaches there. I had worked with some coaches in Boston, where I went to conservatory as well, and so that was sort of my entree into the business of the business, sort of meeting conductors. Martina had master classes from agents, so you really sort of learned what they're looking for. And, just preparing for the whole audition process because, of course, a life as a performer is a life of auditioning and hearing no most of the time. And so that's sort of how I got my start in terms of learning what the business is like, which is completely different than the preparation of craft. Craft is like one planet, and getting a job is like another planet. And so that's really where I began to learn those skills. And then I would say, the one of the turning points for me was when I auditioned for New York City Opera Chorus and got a job singing in the chorus of Margaret Garner, which is the opera based on Toni Morrison's Beloved that Richard Daniel Poor wrote with a libretto by Toni Morrison. And that was a great opportunity because I went there and I also got to sing chorus in another show, a Mascagni opera called Rustic Chivalry, Cavalleria Rusticana. And that was awesome. Because I got to work with wonderful singers, and I also got to cover a small role. I got to understudy a small role. So that was exciting as well. So, and the chorus master there, his name is Gary Lido, who's a wonderful conductor and a wonderful human being, really sort of took me under his wing a little bit, and so I learned a ton from him.
Wow. See, that's what I think is important for our listeners to hear. I do business consulting as one of the things I do outside of the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And I have many people come to me who want to switch careers or who have switched careers, and they've done absolutely no preparation. And then they wonder why things are not going according to plan. You know, and as you just described, there is a lot of preparation that has to go into the idea of doing something and
that's
then actually achieving that idea of doing it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
so,
right.
So it's great that you expounded on that particular part of the puzzle. That's just one part, as you said. There's the craft and building the skills necessary for actually performing that craft. And then there's the actual work that goes behind it. So, so that's something I think definitely our listeners need to hear. Because I get that question time and time again. Why isn't it working? And then I would ask, well, okay, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this?
Mm-hmm.
And like, no, I haven't. I just thought I could just go out and do it. And unfortunately, no, there's a whole other side to it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's the journey of, what is it? The journey of 10,000 miles starts with a single step. And
exactly.
A million other steps in it.
Oh, boy. Yep. So I see, yes, you did the education, you networked, you took the lessons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and now you're at the point of doing your show. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm very excited about the show. I'm working with a little bit of background. I auditioned a few years ago for a new sort of musical theater opera hybrid show called Ellen Craft, A New American Opera, which is about Ellen Craft, who was a slave who passed, she was a light-skinned woman who passed as a white man to sort of gain her freedom. And so a wonderful artist named Sherry Boone, along with a composer named Sean Jeremy Palmer, made this story into an opera. And there was a reading of this opera, I think in, I want to say 2009, maybe 2010. And the woman who directed the show, her name is Pamela Woodard, a Yale School of Drama graduate and a wonderful director. And I just enjoyed working with Pamela so much. You know, I had never worked with a black woman as a director before. And, you know, that's not the only reason, obviously, that that I got along well with Pamela. I think we have a somewhat similar artistic sensibility. But it was just so wonderful working with her. And so, you know, as a singer, you have a teacher who works on your technique. You have a musical coach who works with you on things like dynamics and, you know, how to observe the composer's musical markings, diction details. And then you have a dramatic coach, someone who works with you on making your performance compelling as an actor. And so I asked Pamela if she would do some acting coaching with me, some dramatic coaching with me, and she did. And I enjoyed that work with her. And I had always wanted to do a solo show just because I wanted a vehicle to be able to perform for people. And there were things that I wanted to say about my experiences in the industry. And so I got a grant from the Queen's Council on the Arts. They're just fantastic there to make the show. And then I wrote a draft of the show, and I presented it to Pamela. And she said, you know, this is all very sort of neat and clean and prettily written, but let's see if we can't mess it up a little bit. Let's see if we can't make it a little more raw and a little more honest. And of course, you know, there's a part of me, you know, the sort of scientific part that likes everything in at right angles and straight lines, you know, that was aghast. And then the artist part of me that is attracted to everything I don't understand and everything that scares me was, you know, completely excited. And so I just I took all the doors down and just started to write with no kind of goal in mind. I just started to sort of free write. And I brought her that material, not thinking it was going to be in the show. And I just kept writing and writing and writing. And eventually that very uncensored, very stream of consciousness material came to form the basis of the spoken material in the show. And that's why I decided to call it Mezzo Laid Bare, because it really is my sort of inner thoughts that I never imagined I would be sharing with anybody. But I love the idea of the show because it is, it's classical music. It is recital music. It is staged a little bit, but it's not like it's sort of halfway between opera and musical theater. No, this is recital music. There's a broad range of composers. You've got Purcell, Handel, Strauss, Margaret Bonds, who was an African-American composer working in the 50s and 60s. She's a wonderful composer. Tanya Leon, a Cuban-American composer who's writing now. Wonderful, wonderful composer. I love her music. Ravel, Gluck. So, you know, there's all sorts of nationalities of composers from all different periods. It's a, you know, legitimate classical repertoire, but packaged in an extremely 21st century way, very accessible. There is some explicit language in it because it is very raw. And just sort of, you know, I just love that it represents, I think, the excitement of what it is to perform these older, more classical forms of music in the 21st century and what it is like for an artist to, you know, the whole point of performing is to reveal, is to be in the moment, is to share what's going on with you in that millisecond. That's why people come to the theater, is to feel real things. And so what is it like to find that in music that was written 300 years ago by people, you know, whom I have no other cultural connection to. And so this show, because the thoughts are so personal, is a way to make that bridge and also make it explicit for the audience, you know, so that maybe when somebody comes to see this show and they go to the opera, they'll know, oh, okay, even though this woman is wearing, you know, an 18th century gown and singing an Italian music that was composed 200 years ago, this is just a flesh and blood person just like me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, with all that was said, I am definitely going to check out this show. And I will point out it's only for one night.
Definitely.
And it's at the LaGuardia Performing Arts Center.
Mm-hmm,
the Little Theater, which is located on 3110 Thompson Avenue, Long Island City, New York. Is there anything else you'd like to add at this time pertaining?
Yeah, the show, it's in Long Island City. You can get there on the 7 train, the E, the G, or the R to Queens Plaza, or the 7 to 33rd and Rawson, and it's a very quick trip from the subway to get there. If you go to LaGuardiaPerformingArts.org, you can buy tickets and also find more detailed directions as well. And the number to the box office is 718-482-5151. And you can call there Monday through Friday, 10 to 4, or you can order tickets online.
Oh, excellent. One last thing. I know you are actually from the South. Originally.
Yes, I spent a lot of time there.
Okay. And is that part of the influence or the subject matter of this particular opera?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think maybe in a roundabout way, you know, growing up in the South, And I have Southern conservative, not politically conservative, of course, but, you know, pretty socially conservative parents. Mm-hmm. And I think I always felt a little bit constrained by that. I remember, like, when we would go take Christmas vacations and we would go see my grandparents, I would just be kind of mad that I had to wear a dress and stockings and my patent leather shoes. So I think the South is part of the show in that there's a lot of my personal conflict in it. And as a human being, I have a huge inner conflict of wanting to be appropriate and polite and an example and, you know, Southern hospitality, and also having this need to kind of like open a can of red paint and sort of, you know, make graffiti everywhere. So I think in that way, the South is part of the influence.
That's an interesting way to put it, but reality is that's the nature of art. That's the nature of being an artist. Artists have always been the vanguard of putting it out there, basically. So it's interesting that you've now followed through with this route to put yourself out there.
Mm.
Something that has always been festering, let's put it that way.
Exactly.
And go out and be yourself.
Exactly.
So, wow. Well, on that note, we'll close the program. And it has definitely been a pleasure speaking with you.
It's been fantastic talking to you. Thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome. And as I said, this is Blog Talk Radio with Dave Romeo. And today our guest, Stephanie McGuire. Well, thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Dave. It's been brilliant.
And you have a good evening.
You too. Thanks so much.
All righty. Ciao.
Bye-bye.